This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Happy 4th of July. And I'd like to encourage you to do something patriotic today. And I don't mean hoisting a flag or flipping some burgers. I'd like you to learn some math. Yeah, math. Yes, indeed, because my next guest says a well-educated public is essential to democracy, and that includes being well-informed about math. And by the way, our founding fathers weren't too shabby with their calculus and arithmetic. Thomas Jefferson argued that we should use a decimal system for American currency, and that's one of the reasons why we have 100 pennies in a dollar today. He also used calculus to redesign the plow to make it lift and turn soil as efficiently as possible. He calculated that. He later bragged that it could be, quote, mathematically demonstrated to be perfect as far as perfection depends on mathematical principles. So we're going to do the patriotic thing on Science Friday today. We're going to talk math. And here to help us is Edward Frenkel. He is author of Love and Math. He's professor of math at UC Berkeley. He joins us here in our New York studios. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Frenkel.
It's good to be here.
Our forefathers were scientists and mathematicians.
Yes,
they
were. And also Abraham Lincoln, you know, he was very fond of Euclid.
Is that right?
And he was carrying Euclid's book, Elements, with him at all times.
Wow.
And he thought that this was something that he could learn from, to learn about logic and argumentation and things like that.
Wow, those guys did argue a lot, so they were debating all kinds of things.
And they were good writers and, you know, public speakers, and so it makes you wonder whether perhaps learning mathematics was helpful in that.
Of course, Benjamin Franklin was a scientist.
I'm not sure
how much he knew about mathematics, but he was sure one heck of a great scientist.
Yes, he was.
And so you argue, give me an example where mathematics could help us out in a democracy.
Well, we live in a world which is more and more driven by mathematics. And just a simple example, every time we go online, say on Amazon to buy a book, or on Netflix to rent a movie, we are presented with all kinds of recommendations.
Right.
Those recommendations are produced based on sophisticated algorithms which analyze our past choices, which correlate us with other users, etc. Now, I'm not saying that this is a good thing or a bad thing. There's clearly something good about it, something bad about it. But I think it's very important to be aware what's going on. I think that our ignorance of mathematics is our weakness. It's something which opens us up to manipulation by the powers that be. And if we don't have a clear picture in mind of what's really going on, you know, in the world, I think... we are not prepared to meet the challenges of this brave new world which we live in.
Yeah, it's a brave new world. Tell us an example of a situation where mathematical illiteracy led to a bad outcome for the American people.
Well, there are a few. For example, the global economic crisis. There are two sides here. On one hand, a lot of people were fooled by various, you know, Ponzi schemes and things like that, right? Like Bernie Madoff, we all heard about that.
Right.
So someone who, you know, appreciates mathematics and just has some basic knowledge of mathematics would never invest in a fund that claimed exactly the same rate of return year after year,
right?
But I think a bigger point here is that the global economic crisis was caused to a large extent by misuse of mathematical models by people who did not fully understand how these models functioned. And they kind of use those models thinking, well, while it works, it's fine, you know, and if it doesn't work, the big daddy, the U.S. government will come and bail me out because we are too big to fail, you know.
Yeah.
And so what if we lived in a society in which a Wall Street executive would not shy away from a mathematical formula, would not say, oh, I can't possibly understand this. Only my, you know, quants, my mathematicians can understand. But I'm the decision maker, and I'm making that decision even though I don't really have an understanding of this. What if we live in a society in which that person would actually go and try to understand and would not be afraid and terrified of math?
Mm-hmm. You wrote a piece in Slate last year about the Consumer Price Index and how it could be used to deceive people.
That's right.
Tell us about that.
That's a very good example of a misuse of mathematics. You know, mathematics is like this weapon which, you know, which could be used for good but also for ill. And so in the case of CPI, Consumer Price Index, this is a measure of inflation. So if we measure inflation, say 1%, 2%, that's how that tells the government how the checks for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid are going to grow. Mm-hmm. Also, our tax brackets are pegged to CPI. So the tax brackets are sliding and, in effect, increasing our taxes, right? So, you know, tens of millions of Americans are affected, and even a very small change in this number can lead to, you know, really dramatic consequences. Mm-hmm. And so if the government came out and said, look, we're going to raise your taxes, lower your social benefits, everybody would be up in arms. It's like, why are you doing this and so on? So they found this clever way of saying, we are just going to change a formula for the CPI, for the consumer price index. And, you know, that's a very complicated formula. You're not going to understand it anyway. Don't even try. And our scientists are telling us that we should do it. So, in effect, if they lower CPI, if they say that that inflation was overstated, and if they lower this estimate, in effect, they are raising our taxes and lowering our social benefits. And this is exactly what happened in 1996 when a Boskin Commission was created by Congress. And they were basically tasked with changing the formula for the CPI so that the government would save $1 trillion over 10 years. They calculated that if they lower the CPI just by 1.1%, that would be the net effect. And that's what they did. But there wasn't much public discussion about this. So it's almost like the government using a backdoor on the economy and sort of at will changing our, you know, taxes and social benefits without telling us.
One wonders even how many people in Congress itself understood the mathematics. How many people in Congress understand science and mathematics?
Exactly. And in a similar attempt was made a year, I think a year and a half ago, during the fiscal cliff negotiations. Mm-hmm. Again, that thing was brought up. But fortunately, that it was eventually voted down. But it was in the discussion. So that brings us back to this point that I was making earlier, that our ignorance of mathematics makes us weaker. I don't want to say that everyone should be a mathematician. I don't want to say everyone should know all the details, right? Mm-hmm. But for example, I want to live in a country in which we have sort of this climate of general appreciation, respect for mathematics, where if I don't know this stuff, but I'm not terrified of it, I can ask my neighbor, I can ask my friend, you know, and we can have a conversation about that. And actually, if you take other topics in science, really sophisticated things like DNA and atoms and the solar system and quantum mechanics and so on, it is kind of in our public discourse. Yeah. We don't run away from it. I never took courses on biology, but if someone talks to me about DNA, okay, I will, you know, continue the conversation. I will not say, oh my gosh, this is terrible, I'm so terrified of biology. Right. But that's what happens with math. If you say the word mathematics, people just wave at you most of the time and they say, I hate math. And super intelligent, super smart people who would never say, I hate art or I hate culture or I hate literature or science.
Right.
So that's, I think, that is really the issue. And of course, it's not people's fault, really, because it is the fault of our educational system.
We teach math incorrectly?
We teach math incorrectly. Well, I guess probably most people would not be surprised by that. And I think incorrectly in many different ways. Not only the way we teach mathematics, I think, is not right, but also the material, the selection of the material. Our math curriculum is more than 1,000 years old. And this is something which I find shocking and scandalous, and we don't talk about this. But it's true, you know, Euclid, we celebrate Euclid, of course, and Euclid is very important, but he wrote his book Elements in the year 300 BC, 2,300 years ago. You know, so it's like Homer. It was a great author, and he laid the foundations for the Western canon of literature. But we also read other books, right? We read Melville and Salinger and T.S. Eliot, right? We don't stop at Homer. Why do we stop at Euclid? Non-Euclidean geometry was discovered and studied in the last, you know, 150 years, and it can be made just as accessible to our kids and much more fun to play with.
Give me an example. What is non-Euclidean geometry?
Non-Euclidean geometry is just look at the surface of the Earth.
Right.
It is what we call a sphere, or maybe on a smaller scale, the surface of a basketball, or just a globe. You know, and so you will find some interesting things happening on that surface, which we are not accustomed to if we continue with same old lines and planes. For example, on a plane, you have two parallel lines. So through each line, there is you can draw, if you have a line and a point, you can draw another line, which will be parallel to it.
Right.
But on a sphere, any two sort of the analogs of the lines are the meridians, and any two meridians intersect. So it's a totally different setup.
And it's much more about how the world works.
But it's much more how
right?
the world works.
Because there are no real straight lines in
exactly,
the real world.
Exactly, because not only our Earth is curved, but also our universe is curved. As we learned from Einstein, space-time is curved. A ray of light, you know, doesn't travel on a straight line, but gets bent near a star. That's what we learned from Einstein. And Einstein was informed by non-Euclidean geometry, by the theory developed in particular by German mathematician Riemann 60 years before Einstein had his ideas. But if you study mathematics at school, you'd still think that our world is flat.
Right.
And that, I think, is a problem, that we never get to see really the masterpieces of mathematics. It's almost like they teach us art, but only showing us how to paint fences and walls without ever showing us Picasso or Leonardo da Vinci.
And we also talk about what good art is, how to appreciate it, what the great artists are, but we never talk about when we teach math who the great mathematicians, Gauss, people like that were.
That's right.
And what geniuses they were and how interesting math really is
That's
to these
right.
other
and
people.
That, and that for them, for this great mathematician, mathematics was not about calculations or about numbers. It was about the pursuit of truth and beauty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about this on Independence Day, I think that when we reach the point where more and more of us would be aware of mathematics and would not run away from it, but would appreciate its beauty and how important it is in our lives, we will actually create a freer and better society. You know, speaking of, you know, founding fathers, I like this quote that of Thomas Jefferson wrote in a letter, that if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. And I think ignorance of mathematics is something that impedes our progress and prevents us from creating a better society.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other paradigms in teaching of math that we should shift at all?
Well, so, you know, when I was growing up, I also thought mathematics was boring and stale and irrelevant. But what clinched it for me somehow, what got me excited, was the realization that math is used in physics. So I think it's very important that we draw connections between mathematics, which is, by its very definition, the most abstract subject, that we draw connections between it and the real world. So, for example, so I was lucky, it's just that in the last year of high school, I had someone who opened those doors for me and explained that physicists, when they theorized this fancy, you know, elementary particles of which our universe is built, actually used sophisticated mathematics, and more specifically, a theory of symmetries. And symmetry, of course, is something which we see in our everyday lives. But in mathematics, it takes this very special form. It gives rise to this fascinating theory, without which we would never know that, you know, atoms consisted of protons and neutrons, and those in turn consist of elementary particles called quarks, etc., etc. It was when I realized that, that I saw how much bigger and much more fascinating the subject was.
Yeah. Talking about math with Edward Frankel, author of Love and Math, on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. And in fact, I had a math teacher in 10th grade who I'll never forget, because when we sat down in 10th grade and he said, we thought he was very funny. All he kept saying was, "I love math. I love math, Mr. Cavallaro. I love math." And we thought this guy was a nutty guy. But by the end of the year, it all sunk in, and we loved math as much as he did, but it was his inspiration that really did it.
That's so important, because mathematics is really subject to love and celebrate, but you have to have a teacher who will open those doors for you. And teachers, you know, frankly, they are in a very precarious and difficult position, because they're constantly bombarded with different, you know, systems, and they have to do this and they have to do that, and the testing systems are changing and so on. So we have to give them the tools. We have to give our teachers the right tools so that they love mathematics, and then they convey that love to our children, to inspire them, so the children don't run away from class, but they come to class. We want to make them hungry.
We look forward to that class, because it was going to be fun. He made math fun,
That's right.
And we understood what he was doing. So how do you answer people who say, "Well, I don't really need to know math behind, let's say, encryption, as long as I recognize as an icon, a lock icon. That's all I need to know."
Well, so as I said earlier, when we are ignorant of math, we are opening ourselves up to manipulation by the powers that be. Mm-hmm. And a good example of that is the NSA surveillance scandal.
Yeah. It allows you to become a critical thinker.
And a critical thinker, because mathematics is, you know, is an antidote to dogmas and prejudice. You know, it's something which helps us to be free. And, you know, there's this great German mathematician, Georg Cantor, who was one of the creators of the theory of infinity. And he wrote that the essence of mathematics lies in its freedom. But I would actually add to this that where there is no mathematics, there is no freedom. Mathematics is what helps us to see the world in the right light and kind of doesn't allow us to be be manipulated and misled. It's really the last line of defense, if you think about it, against, you know, oppression, tyranny. You know, the protagonist of 1984, the famous Orwell's novel, mm-hmm. was terrified of thinking about what if the big brother would tell me tomorrow that 2 + 2 = 5.
Right.
2 + 2 = 4 is something we can all agree on. Mathematical truths are the timeless, persistent, and necessary truths. Mm-hmm. And so mathematics unites us all. It's something that we all share.
So what kind of homework assignment could you give on 4th of July to people who want to learn something more, besides reading your book, Love and Math?
Well, I would in general recommend just setting aside some time to learn a little bit about what mathematics is really about. Because what I think what it comes to, 99.9% of us, I believe, have been deprived of 1,000 years worth of essential knowledge, not even being aware of this.
Yeah.
So
you don't even know what you've missed. So just find out you've missed.
That's right. And how can you possibly expect our children to love it if they don't show it to them?
Right.
You know, Picasso said, and it's a great quote, that every child is an artist. The question is how to preserve that when they grow up. And I would say that every child is a mathematician.
Yes.
The question is how do we preserve that when they grow up? But I think that the responsibility is on the parents. Mm-hmm. Because children cannot decide on the curriculum and things like that. So it's really the adults, the grown-ups, that should really set aside some time and go online, say, go on YouTube and find some videos about mathematics. Watch a film about mathematics or mathematicians. Read a popular book. Read a magazine, online magazine about mathematics, and get yourself educated a little bit. And I think that this is almost a patriotic duty for all of us on this 4th of July.
Well, there's no better way than to sum it up with that statement. Thank you, Edward Frankel, for taking time to be with us today.
My pleasure.
Dr. Frankel is author of Love and Math, and he's professor of mathematics at the University of California at Berkeley, and he was here in our New York studios at Science Friday.